I'm Russ White for Greening of the Great Lakes on MSU Today on WKAR. I caught up with renowned astrophysicist Neil deGrasse Tyson and asked him what exactly an astrophysicist does.
We care about everything that's outside of Earth's atmosphere. So the entire universe beyond Earth. So we would care about Earth's atmosphere and Earth, but there are other people who are first in line for that, the geologists and the biologists and the like. But planets, stars, galaxies, asteroids, asteroid impacts, the Big Bang, all of it, Pluto, all of it. That's our purview. And we apply the laws of physics as we come to learn them on Earth to the processes and phenomena of the universe.
Time magazine called you the Carl Sagan of the 21st century. Is that cool with you, or what does that mean to you?
Well, he carved a huge swath. What Carl Sagan did in his day was bring science to the public. And that had been done in spotty ways before. He wasn't the first to do it, but no one did it on the scale that he did in so many different media available to him at the time. So I'm being compared with him, and I find that a very high honor. They're huge shoes to fill. And all I can say is that I'm in the swath that he has carved, but I don't see myself completely filling it. The times are different, the choices of media are different, and I think I, as well as other scientists, perhaps collectively, are doing what he did alone 20, 30 years ago.
Neil Tyson, what advice would you have in terms of science policy for our new president?
My greatest worry was that there would be the urge to put Band-Aids on all of America's problems. There's a failing industry, you know, put money there to solve it. We have create a program that fixes that. But if that's the way you look at the problem, all you're doing is putting Band-Aids on a deeper problem that prevails in the nation. And that is, what is our investments in our own future? When I say investments, I mean R&D investments. There's always the educational investment you must make. That's a given any year, any time, any place. But what often gets the short view is the money we spend that pays dividends on timescales longer than election cycles. Okay? And so much science R&D, money that you spend today would return in 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, that elected officials don't see it as especially relevant because a big concern is getting reelected. And people will see, well, what have you done for me this year or this month or this week?
And why is it important for us to invest in basic science research?
Oh, well, this is the 21st century. If you want to ask what will be the engines of economic growth in the 21st century, it'll turn on an axis defined by our investments in science and technology. It's that simple. The rest of the world knows it. The rest of the developing world knows it. So if we don't, the rest of the world will. And they'll just pass us by as we sit here looking and crying foul. Oh, the playing field's not level. Oh, how come there? Oh, they charge, pay their workers less. Excuse me. It's you wouldn't even be having that conversation if you were at the frontier of science and technological innovation. And so my hope for the country is that we will have the kind of future that we all took for granted would always be there, but in fact requires a persistent investment.
Dr. Tyson, can you describe some of the practical benefits of investment in fields like nuclear science and astrophysics?
What you can do is, when you look at science, particularly the physical sciences, at their extreme research frontiers, it's very hard to say, oh, there's a particle, there's a isotope of beryllium that's going to put food on my plate tomorrow. No one is going to tell you that. What we can tell you, however, is that research on a scientific frontier hardly ever translates into your meal the next day. So what you need to look at is, why do it? Well, what you find is the act of advancing a scientific frontier stimulates innovations in science and technology and engineering. It attracts the most brilliant minds that exist in the educational pipeline at any given time, because the most interesting problems to solve are the ones on the frontier. And so what happens is the act of doing that creates a landscape of innovation that transforms culture and society. All right. Most people don't know the origin of sort of the internet. All right. It's traceable to particle physicists trying to share data in Switzerland. Okay. At the CERN facility there, the facility that's now is the Large Hadron Collider. You may have read about that. People worried that it would create a black hole that would eat the Earth. The world has become so transformed simply by the persistent investment in an advancing frontier. So we have to wean ourselves off of the expectation and the requirement that next week you're going to feel the effect of the investment on a frontier research project. You're not. But later on you will, and your next generation certainly will feel it. And so it's true with the exploration in space. It's true for, by the way, just space is another good example here. Why are we spending our money up there when we could be spending our money down here? Excuse me, you know, up there is where the asteroids come from, okay? The one that took out the dinosaurs. At some point, you really do want to be looking up. But not only that, Mars once had liquid running water coursing over its surface. It's now bone dry. Something bad happened to the climate on Mars. I want to understand what happened there so I can prevent it from happening here. So the research frontier pays huge dividends to our understanding of our place in the universe and the transformation of how it is we live our lives.
Neil Tyson, how do we go about then invigorating science education in our country?
That's a common and important question. The first sort of obvious solution is to get better science teachers, but I think that's a partial solution to the problem. It's an obvious but partial solution to the problem. What you really need on the other end of the pipeline is a hugely ambitious national project, something like the Apollo program back in the 60s, where you have a great science teacher, now you're interested in science, now you have to ask yourself, where are you going to land when you get out? If there's no place to land, we'll lose you. You become an investment banker or something else, where you're no longer applying your brilliance to advancing our understanding of our place in the natural world. So when people knew we were going to the moon, it's an impossible dream that had been with us since we've been thinking about the night sky. That was a seductive force in the educational pipeline, a force that we don't really have today, large, grand vision that will attract the chemist and the biologist and the physicists and the geologists and the technological community to help enable it. So I think we need a grand project, a big national ambition, visible, properly marketed so that people understand it and know its value to the rest of us. Without it, you'll still get scientists who always knew they wanted to be a scientist, but you're not going to attract the others who need and require a really tasty carrot at the end of that pipeline.
I think you just started to answer it, Neil Tyson, but how do we make U.S. science more competitive then?
What we need to recognize is you can't – here's another way to think about it. And I use the asteroid only partially literally but also metaphorically. If the asteroid's coming, what's your first thought? Is it to build a shelter to hide from the asteroid? Maybe. But I'd rather you thought to yourself, how can I deflect it? These are two different kinds of people in a society. So we need to bring to the public awareness the value of being, if not scientifically trained, at least scientifically literate, so that you could vote to fund solutions to problems that are not simply Band-Aids. And, you know, rather than saying, how come the government didn't have support for people when the levees broke? That's one way to think about it. Another one is, why didn't we completely redesign the levees so that this would have never happened in the first place? It takes the mind of an engineer or scientist or a technologist to think that way. Without it, we just slide back into the cave. And I think we do have a competitive spirit. And as other nations start doing things that we always thought we should have done first, I think that'll help light a flame under our buttocks, as Sputnik did in 1957. People were banging down the doors of the science classroom to get in to try to get more science in our pipeline. And maybe it needs that kind of a – I hope it doesn't require an act of war to make this happen, but certainly a failing economy ought to have the right force to operate on our ambitions.
And Neil, I know you've only just had a quick look around. We're talking at the NSCL facility at Michigan State University, and the rare isotope facility was granted by the DOE. Exciting times. What are your thoughts on that project?
First of all, congratulations that you get money from the Department of Energy to upgrade the facility. That bodes very well, not only for the facility, but for the campus and, of course, for the region. Lansing, Michigan then gets thought of not as some sort of small town in backwoods of Michigan. It becomes a major draw for the future of high technology in the region. When I think of other cities that transform themselves simply because of this kind of because something like this landed in their municipal boundaries, I think of Huntsville, Alabama. Huntsville, Alabama in the 1950s. Alabama is like the seat of the greatest conflicts in the civil rights movement, and there's Huntsville, Alabama, has a NASA center where they bring engineers and scientists, rocket engineers, to build the Saturn V rocket. And if you're going to build the rocket, now you need support industries to build the parts, to machine the materials. And so an industry started building up around Huntsville, Alabama, that transformed that region of the South. And right now, you land in Huntsville, Alabama, at the airport. There are these aerospace advertisements and high tech and IT. And you think, what country did I land in? Is this America? Is it Alabama even? Yes, it is Alabama. It's an enclave and has the best schools, because if you bring educated people, they want their kids to be educated as well. So the transformation can be significant, like I said, not only intellectually, but also culturally in the region. So I want my hats off to the facility landing this DOE contract.
Keep up with Neil deGrasse Tyson on Twitter at Neil Tyson. I'm Russ White for Greening of the Great Lakes on MSU Today on WKAR.